Welcome to All Points Considered, where we debate the contentious, the radical, and sometimes just strange implications of scientific discovery. I'm Naomi Nix.
And I'm Jean Lehman. And today's topic is geoengineering for climate change.
Last April, Obama said he wouldn't rule out the possibility of using geoengineering to fight climate change.
Yeah, right now there are four main categories of proposed geoengineering projects: solar radiation management, greenhouse gas remediation, Arctic geoengineering, and heat transport. The most hotly debated and arguably most feasible option was proposed in the mid-1990s by Nobel Prize-winning chemist Paul Crutzen. It's called solar radiation management via stratospheric sulfur aerosols.
And the science about the way it works is actually pretty simple. Sulfur dioxide reacts with water in the atmosphere to create droplets of sulfuric acid. Those droplets are particularly good at sending the sunlight back into space, which would effectively reduce global warming. And because sulfur doesn't heat the stratosphere as much as other aerosols, it wouldn't work against the cooling effect. The idea is actually based on research on volcanic eruptions, the most famous example being Mount Pinatubo, which erupted in 1991. And it released 10 million tons of sulfur, which cooled the plant's temperature by approximately 0.9 degrees Fahrenheit for several months. As someone who supports geoengineering techniques to reduce climate change, I think releasing sulfur particles in the stratosphere is probably our best bet.
I am not a huge fan of geoengineering generally, or this specific technique. Mount Pinatubo provides a fantastic natural model, and it demonstrates both the pros and the cons. Some of the cons are that sulfates in the atmosphere cause ozone depletion. Kind of a big deal when the hole over the Antarctic is already taking a really long time to go away. Scientists at the Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, found that Pinatubo decreased global stream flow and increased drought. Also, the non-uniform cooling, just sort of inherent in this kind of technique, because the Earth is not a uniform place, will affect the Eurasian continent a lot more than other places on the planet. This will affect the summer monsoons, and therefore sort of mess with the food supply for billions of people, which is, I think, obviously not a good thing. So anyway, there you have it. I'm against it. Naomi's for it. Today we're going to play a fun little game of buy or sell, where we throw out some hot topics about this and talk about whether we're for or against it.
Scott Barrett, a professor of natural resource economics, described stratospheric engineering as a stopgap measure, a quick fix, a Band-Aid. Do you buy the idea that this is just a Band-Aid, a quick fix? And if it is that such a bad thing?
Yeah, I totally buy that it is a Band-Aid, and I also buy that it is bad. It does not address the root of the problem, which is the presence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere as a result of our emissions. And so this is kind of a big shift from the way that we currently perceive the climate change issue. It kind of just takes us back to before we cared about it. And this is not good at all. It is good, though, as a lifesaver. If the climate change worsens, or the climate change situation worsens abruptly, this can act as like a lifesaver or a lifeline to buy us time to develop and distribute more effective mitigation efforts.
Okay. I definitely buy, actually. I think the science is pretty clear that it could act quickly, so it is a quick fix. But I think it could also be one of our only fixes. Paul Crutzen, a Dutch Nobel Prize-winning atmospheric scientist, argued that, you know, our current efforts to try to emit fewer greenhouse gases have been grossly unsuccessful, and that releasing sulfur into the stratosphere might be the only option to really get results. And there's a scientist, Laurel Wood, who estimates that it would cost $1 billion a year to put enough particles into the stratosphere to reduce the sunlight by 1%. And that's all we need to start reversing global warming. I think if there were quick fixes to other problems like the AIDS epidemic or high obesity rates, I'm sure policymakers would be jumping at the chance to use it. And so I say, you know, if we have this as a possibility, we might as well use it. Some people, though, have argued that, you know, it's a kind of risky endeavor to do. Do you buy or sell the idea that, you know, the possible side effects and risks outweigh the benefits?
I buy that idea. Alan Robach and others have published a paper in the Geophysical Research Letters outlining the costs, benefits, and risks of stratospheric geoengineering. And some of the most significant, in my opinion, are... I've already mentioned some of them, actually, but the fact that it does not address the core of the issue, which is greenhouse gases, They're going to be there until we do something to get rid of them. Also, the planet will warm very rapidly once we stop geoengineering. It's estimated that the temperature will rise 5 degrees in a couple decades after we cease this technique, essentially erasing everything that we would have worked so hard to achieve. Interestingly, it will also hinder our ability to harness some of the most efficient solar panel technologies available, because they depend on direct sunlight, and that will not be available because that's kind of the point of this kind of sulfur mediation technology. And also, maybe less significantly, but still important to some, the skies will be less blue. Summer won't be as fun, I suppose. But anyway, yeah.
That would be unfortunate.
I think that overall, the risks do sort of outweigh the benefits. What do you think?
I mean, I definitely buy the idea that there are some risks, and I think the science is pretty clear that there are potential side effects. But I think I also buy the idea that some of those potential side effects are kind of already being addressed. And so, similarly, a scientist we've already mentioned, Paul Crutzen, the Nobel-winning prize scientist that some also call Dr. Ozone, I might add, has concluded, that the damage to the ozone would be minimal, that the sulfur dioxide would eventually settle out in the polar regions, and in such small amounts that significant harm would probably be unlikely.
All right, that's fair.
Do you actually, buy or sell the idea that this is probably the most cost-effective way to do this?
It's nice to be talking about cost-effectiveness in a game called Buy and Sell.
yes, it is.
Yeah, I definitely buy it. All the way back in 1992... That's almost 20 years ago. Wow. The panel on policy implications of greenhouse warming stated that one of the surprises of their analysis was the relatively low cost. And a 1994 paper produced by the same group estimated that it would cost only $8 billion a year. That is nothing on an international scale. And a Livermore physicist predicted that engineered particles, rather than naturally derived ones, will only cost $1 billion. By the year 2100. So that's, I guess if $8 billion is nothing, then that's less than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely buy the idea that it's cheap. Scott Barrett has also argued that geoengineering solutions would cost 0.5% to 0.05% as much as our current strategy of trying to reduce greenhouse emissions in the private sector as well as nationally. And I think also kind of another kind of question to consider on, how do you decide who pays what? Developing nations rightfully object to having to bear the cost of solving a problem that, unfortunately, mostly the industrialized world has created.
What do you think about unilateral action in terms of this, a single country sort of taking charge and initiating this solution? Do you buy or sell that?
I definitely buy. I think that it's a good thing, that geoengineering techniques allow wealthy countries to just take control and fix the problem. I think it takes the burden off of leaders in the developing world of having to invest resources into research and the development of carbon emissions reduction strategies. And I mean, if we think back as recently as last December during the climate change talks in Copenhagen, we see the difficulties and frustrations of trying to form an international coalition around this issue. Wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to rely on China and could just take matters into our own hands?
Yeah, it definitely would. But I think that I'm going to have to maybe sell it a little bit, at least in the strictest sense of the word. And it just seems unreasonable to suggest that in the highly international and collaborative state of the world, this would ever be seen as acceptable or a good idea. I just don't think any country able to pursue geoengineering would do so entirely unilaterally. With that said, though, I'll buy a softer definition, sort of a group of countries with well-funded research programs and institutional support. If they decided to sort of take charge and initiate this kind of program, I don't know that I could oppose it as long as it was well thought out and considerate. And there's, of course, the question of who's going to control the thermostat, even if we do get a coalition of countries together, sort of buy it at least.
Do you buy yourself that this is ultimately, about a tragedy of the commons situation?
I definitely buy that it is a tragedy of the commons. I think that I agree with Stephen Gardner. He's an associate professor of philosophy at the University of Washington in Seattle, that the true tragedy of the commons is the climate change issue.
Yeah. I definitely buy the idea that this is a tragedy of the commons situation. I think no one country can can completely be blamed for the shrinkage of the Greenland ice sheet. But I think Jay Michelson, he's a law student at Yale, I think he has a point when he argues that this is ultimately a problem that is absent from the consciousness of Americans and probably from people worldwide, because its effects aren't immediate.
All right, that about wraps us up here on All Points Considered.
I'm Naomi Nix.
And I'm Jean Lehman.
Thank you. This work reflects my own work in accordance with the university regulations.
Yes, I pledge my honor that I have not violated the honor code in the creation of this podcast.